Welcome to It's More Than That.
I got to the point where wanting to make meaningful change takes a position, a power, and so being a dean and being able to affect change and culture was really attractive.
It's More Than That is a podcast by the University of Minnesota Duluth. I'm Paula Peterson. Often we don't understand the full story of someone's reality. Join me as we explore the complexities of the human experience. This week on the show, Wendy Reed. Welcome to the show, Dr. Wendy Reed, Dean of the Swenson College of Science and Engineering. Did I get all that?
You did. Thank
all right.
you, Paula.
Thanks
I'm
for
happy
being
to be here.
Thank you for being here. So you've listened to the podcast, I understand, a little bit of it anyway.
Yeah.
And so have a sense of what we are trying to do here. And it really is to get a sense of people's stories of who you are, where you came from, how you ended up here. Then we'll wax into some campus climate issues and solutions, which I know you've been on the front end of already in your little bit of time here. Well, it seems a little over a year, right?
Yeah, a little over a year now. Yeah. Almost a year and a half.
Yeah. So we'll just go wherever we go.
Great.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
So who are you and where do you come from?
Who am I?
Dean Wendy Reed.
Yeah. So I'm a Midwesterner. I've always been in the Midwest. Okay. I grew up in Michigan. Central Michigan, sort of farming community, small community. My parents are both teachers. So my mom was an elementary school teacher. My dad was a high school teacher. Also the high school football coach, which added all sorts of interesting,
I bet. Yeah.
Yeah. Dynamics. And my father's parents were teachers. My uncle's a teacher. So, so a long history of people in public education in my family. And then it's a small community. Farming was a big deal. We had a small college, small liberal arts college where I grew up. So I think that growing up in a place where public education was really valued and just part of our family fabric was really important for me thinking about like what I wanted to do next. Also growing up in a small community, small town, I really wanted to travel. I love to travel.
Okay.
Yeah. And I saw my interest in science and biology as a way to kind of mix my love for animals and, growing up, I think I wanted to be a vet. That's what everybody.
So yeah. Yeah. That must have been the farm kid thing to do, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. I love animals, so I want to be a vet.
Yeah.
And then getting into it and figuring out where could I do both of those things for college. Really, it was the first time I left that, the small community. And I went to Kalamazoo for college. And it was a small college where everybody did foreign study. And that's why I chose that.
Okay.
At that time, it was really hard to mix being a scientist and wanting to go overseas. That was typically for the humanities or people interested in the arts. Mm-hmm. But as a scientist, I wanted to do that.
Yeah. And so did even science students in Kalamazoo, everyone went?
I think it's like 90% of the students go on foreign study.
Wow.
Yeah.
Which is what we call study abroad here.
Yep.
Is that okay?
Exactly.
All right. So from Central, how big was the town in Central Michigan that you grew up in?
15,000 to 20,000 people.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It was one of the things about the community was, it was a farming community, but then with a college there, Total Petroleum had a refinery there.
Oh, interesting.
Interesting. Yeah. And then in that local community, it's actually in the 70s, late 60s, 70s, there was a mix-up, and they were making a fire retardant, and if I'm remembering correctly, the fire retardant got into cattle feed and ended up poisoning a lot of the milk supply and the cattle. And it ended up, the outcome was a Superfund site of cleanup there.
Wow.
Right in the backyard of where I grew up.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a, a small community, tight community.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you still have family?
I do. There? My dad is still there.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So you get back there once in a while.
Every once in a while, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And then, so Kalamazoo for your undergrad.
Mm-hmm.
Then where'd you go next?
Where'd I go next? I took a couple years off, so I took a gap year after college and worked for a couple years at a biological field station, which are these great places where you get to do science all the time. And they're really special. They're like, it's like being at summer camp year round. Yeah,
okay.
They're great.
For adults.
For adults.
Right.
For scientists and adults. It's really wonderful.
You should see the smile on Wendy's face right now as she's talking about her summer camp for adults.
Summer camp for adults. Doesn't that sound lovely?
Science camp.
Yes. Yeah. So I worked there for a couple years and then went to grad school at Iowa State University.
Okay.
And at Iowa State, I worked with my advisor, my PhD advisor, was a woman who she worked with birds. So as an undergrad, I kind of got interested in birds and bird eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And then Carol, my PhD advisor, also worked with birds. And I got to go to Antarctica for 5 months,
wow,
1 year, which was amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Researching birds.
Penguins. Can you believe it?
Oh,
right?
Wow.
Yeah.
So what does that look like? I mean, what do you do for 5 months with penguins?
So there's another field camp.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, summer camp for adults in Antarctica, Palmer Station. And so we take a boat. We took a boat from Chile down across to Palmer Station. So, you know, Antarctica kind of looks like a comma.
Okay.
And it's that little comma piece, the little part that sticks up is where Palmer Station is. And so we were there for 5 months, living in a field station with 40 people. We had somebody that it's a National Science Foundation funded site. So in Antarctica, it's really unique because the only people who can be there are scientists.
Mm-hmm.
And there is some military action, but they're all based in science. And so we were there at the station. We had somebody to cook for us and take care of us and take care of the boats that we took across to the islands where the penguins were.
Wow.
It was really amazing.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Wow.
So more like observational research, or did you take samples of things?
So a lot of the work that I do, I'm really interested in maternal effects. And so I'm really interested in how mothers influence their offspring through investments they make in eggs. So there's eggs are full of all sorts of anything that an embryo needs to grow, including hormones from the mother.
Okay.
So a lot of the work that we were doing was looking at the hormone state. So things like testosterone and estrogen and thyroid hormone and all those hormones that we have in humans, we also see those in other animals. And trying to understand when the penguins come onto land, they have one state and then they fast for a really long time while they lay eggs and sit on the eggs. And what happens over that time, and how does their physiology change?
Hmm. Wow. Now, March of the Penguins is coming
to
mind.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. They are the funniest animals.
Yeah.
So they, like, steal each other's nest material, which is just rocks. So you'll see penguins, like, traversing an island carrying little rocks in their mouths to their nest.
Yeah.
And then it's not okay just to take your neighbor's rock. You got to go like
far away.
Far away.
Yeah, not in our neighborhood.
Not
right?
in our neighborhood. You go to the next neighborhood and grab a rock and bring it back.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it was fun.
Okay. So that's your academic area, is this maternal...
Yeah, maternal effects.
Maternal effects in penguin specific?
No,
nope,
just in birds,
birds in general. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
So you're a dean now.
I am a dean now.
And my understanding is the opportunity to continue your research is something you sacrifice often in a role like that. So is that true in your case?
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Okay.
And so, you know, that it's sad, And so I do miss doing research, but I also find that singularity of focus that you get in discovering something new and building a program, I get that same with the kinds of things that I'm doing that aren't necessarily maternal effects in birds.
Yeah.
That with, you know, growing people and programs and that it's the same piece of my brain that works.
Okay.
And that's really exciting.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I want to talk about some of those programs. Mm-hmm. That's part of inviting you to this podcast is just knowing, I mean, you came in and I think the first week I met you practically was you were doing campus climate. You were there and having a strong voice in the work of Goal 2. And so I just want to hear about kind of where some of that motivation comes from and some of those programs and people that you're growing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's campus climate, particularly what it is to be a woman in a STEM field has been throughout my career part of what I've done. So even in grad school, being engaged in American Women in Science, you know, formally or doing outreach for kids in K-12, that was a part of what I was doing. When I went to my first academic position, that institution was a it's called a NSF Advance Transformational Institution grant that we had to really transform the institution to be to recognize that we have work to do in gender equity and make that work and make progress in that. And I was one of the senior personnel on that and sort of took that on from the time I started, because looking for those opportunities, and when you come in as a new faculty member, where can you find those opportunities? And there was a group together that was really talking about those issues and what could we do and how could we change it, the culture in the university. And so I remember we would meet like in the dean's and engineering dean's conference room, and at that time, before tenure, I had my children, so I have three children.
Okay.
And so I think I felt like I was pregnant like my whole entire pre-tenure time. But I remember bringing my child in, and I was like, okay, if I can't nurse in this environment, then we really have a problem. Mm-hmm. And I remember later hearing from other people, they were like, you just came in and started nursing your child. And they were like, we were like, whoa,
she's serious.
She's serious.
Wow.
And to me, I was like, why wouldn't I? Yeah. This is a maternal effect. I'm a scientist.
Yeah, right. Wow. So that was that was seen as a positive.
Yeah. It was seen as activism, which was funny for me because I didn't equate it with that.
Yeah. It still is, I would say.
Yeah. But as a biologist, right? I'm just trying to feed my baby.
Right.
So
very practical.
That's how it does.
Yeah, right.
That's how it works.
Oh, so you, I know you joined UMD from North Dakota.
Mm-hmm. North Dakota State University.
Is that where you went through your tenure process then?
It was.
Okay.
It was. So I was there for 16 and a half years before coming here.
On faculty.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did you have some administrative roles there?
Yeah. So I was in an associate dean position for a while, and then department head in biology.
Yeah,
for
okay.
quite a while.
All right.
Yeah.
So what about the position here in Duluth drew you?
Yeah.
To lead a large STEM science, let's translate for the science, technology, engineering, and math.
Yes.
Right? The STEM fields.
Yes.
To lead a college as a woman, that's a big deal.
Yeah. It's exciting.
Yeah.
I think for me, I got to the point where wanting to make meaningful change takes a position, a power, and resources to make that happen. And I was just running up against sort of the butting against the wall of where I could do that in my current position. Mm-hmm. And so being a dean and being able to affect change and culture, not just in a single department, but across an entire college of science and engineering mm-hmm. was really attractive. Duluth is also, you know, it's on the path of back home in Michigan and Fargo. And so driving through this area, I know mm-hmm. this area well growing up in the Great Lakes. Sure. And it's one of the places that you're like, oh, I could live here. This is really neat opportunities to raise a family and be outdoors and mm-hmm. do the things that we really value.
Good. And your college has a number of great programs that utilize the lake and mm-hmm. and water. And
yeah, water is a really important research theme. Mm-hmm. It really, I think, organizes a lot of how we think about our science. Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So programs. I'm curious about the opportunities. You mentioned the opportunities to have influence and power as a dean. Like, what are some examples of what you're doing or have done mm-hmm. to make some of those changes?
So I think part of the changes when we think about equity in an organization, it's really, you know, there's multiple tines that we need to address. So one is institutional. So what are we doing? What are our policies and what are our procedures? And are they disadvantaging certain groups or advantaging other groups? Mm-hmm. You know? And so really taking a look at what are the policies and procedures and how can we address those? So that's something, just an environmental scan right away. It takes a little while, learning that there are a lot of policies and procedures that are, this is the way we've always done it. Mm-hmm. And so when you have that space between, this is the way we've always done it, but we've never written it down and codified it, that space opens up for a lot of bias. Mm-hmm. And so understanding that and sort of addressing that when we come in, that was maybe the first step, and it's ongoing. It's not something you do once. It's, mm-hmm. it should be a living piece of what you do. The other is, like, what support networks do we have for people to be successful? Like, how do you enable people to be successful, and what kind of support do they need? Where is it professional development? Mm-hmm. Is it just being able to talk about what's happening, address it? There's also a piece of accountability. So when you have problems, that you're holding people accountable, and how do we do that? And then I think really thinking through, you know, policies, procedures, support networks, what are we doing for making sure when people are here, they have what they need to be successful, mm-hmm. and making sure that we're retaining people, that we're recruiting people and hiring people without a biased mm-hmm. lens.
Yeah, hard to do. I mean, it's hard to separate ourselves from the lens that we were socialized
absolutely
with and into. Yeah.
Right. And I think it's, the way we approach it is, if you're aware of it, mm-hmm. you can help keep it in check and ask yourself, am I making this decision because maybe there's something that I'm not addressing? Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. And that whole, this is the way we've always done it, is some of that history as a newer person and a newer leader coming mm-hmm. in. That's not always a popular or easy approach.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you want to honor the way we've done things.
Yeah. Yeah.
But sometimes we see that the way we've done things has not been good for everybody.
Yeah. Right.
And so it's been interesting, like, learning the culture here mm-hmm. And just trying to think about new ways of doing things sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. So I'm curious, too, about the program that you most recently brought. I think that'd be interesting for the Allies and Advocates mm-hmm. program and kind of where that fits in with not only your college, but our overall campus mm-hmm. climate.
Yeah. And so the Allies and Advocates is a program where we grow and develop and train people who are part of a majority group how to be allies and advocates for those are in minority groups. And so the program that came here, the training, was binary in the sense it was for gender equity with men and thinking about men and women. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is that we need women can't fix a gender issue. We need our male colleagues who are in the majority here to step up and help us and stand up for us and call out gender inequities when they see it happening. And so that takes understanding bias, understanding your contribution to these long-term practices that have disadvantaged maybe women in science, and being willing to say, you know, that's not how we want to do things. And in the moment of a faculty meeting or wherever they are, to be say, now, wait a minute, like, I want to hear from these people around the table and make sure that everyone's voice is heard. And so the Allies and Advocates program is really about training people how to do that work.
Okay.
And responding to the needs that are identified by the minority group.
So just for the heck of it, if there's someone out there saying, well, not necessarily understanding what a gender bias in might look like, is there an example that's general enough that you, like, what, I mean, you mentioned everyone's voice is being heard, so, you know, knowing the research about who talks most and who gets heard.
Yeah, so we know that in meetings that women are more likely to be interrupted. They're more likely to be talked over. And they're more likely when they suggest a solution that their solution isn't necessarily recognized, even though that same solution, if it's said by a man, might be accepted and and come forward. So those are, that's one area that we've seen. We know that in the hiring process, if you have two resumes that are equal and one has a man's name and one has a woman's name, that the woman's contributions are devalued even though it's the exact same same work. And so those are the kinds of things that just takes a check. And it can't always be people who are in the minority. It can't always be women who are making that, bringing that forward. So the hope, and I think there's a lot of enthusiasm on campus. It was very well received, the training that came, that we can do that here, that we can develop our allies and advocates and formalize it on our campus. And I think that would be really impactful.
And I even heard folks wanting to, like, yes, let's do this and expand it. Let's go further with race and, you know, go beyond gender. So that's exciting to think about, too. So thinking about you growing up in the Midwest, and I know we share a rural farming Midwest background. And just curious for you, like, where some of these seeds were planted. What kind of role models did you have that gender equity and parity would be on your radar? Or experiences
that's a really
that
good
weren't,
question.
You know, that, like, where do you have a sense of where this came from?
So I've always had strong female mentors and people in my life. You know, my mother, my grandmother. And I think I had, in my PhD work, I had a female graduate advisor, and she was an incredible role model for how you navigate science as a woman, as a couple even. That was really impactful. So her husband was also a scientist, and mine is as well. And so how do you navigate that dual career couple piece? And then my postdoc advisor, I did a postdoc at Indiana University in Bloomington. She also was a very strong mentor. And I think having that experience of having strong women in mentor roles for me, I I didn't know that it should be any different. It actually wasn't until I got to North Dakota State that I realized that I first saw, when I looked around, I didn't see a lot of other female scientists. So there, you know, there were few female full professors there. There were, in my department, I was the first female woman to go through tenure. And so, yeah, just not having had strong role models for a long time, and then all of a sudden looking around and saying, this doesn't look like what I had, you know, that was different.
Interesting. So you didn't really even experience it yourself, you were conscious of?
No, that I was conscious of.
Yeah. That's all of a sudden you turn around and you're the female role model.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. So what else are you in your year plus at UMD? What else are you noticing or paying attention to in terms of campus climate, whether it's in your college or in general, that you think is worth lifting up?
Yeah, I mean, the eye towards gender is still at the forefront for the college. So for me, to make things better, it takes continuous work. Culture takes a long time to build. It takes a long time to change, but it can't take as long to change as it took to build. We don't have 30 years, right?
Yeah.
Or 40 years, or however long the culture has been building. So really looking to, you know, how do we do this, support people through hard work? It's messy work. It's uncomfortable, but making sure that I have a college where I know that everyone has the opportunity to do their best work is really, really important to me.
Yeah.
Life is too short not to come to work every day and say, I'm really glad I'm here. I enjoy the work that I do and the colleagues, and I feel supported. And I feel like we need that in institutions of higher education.
Yeah. And that's more than gender, as you
it's more
indicated.
Than gender.
Yeah.
There's power tied up into it. There's gender. I mean, it's more than that.
Yeah, it's more than that.
It's more than that.
Nice segue.
Nice.
Yeah. So how has, I mean, I'm aware of just your role and our listening audience being, we're outside of UMD, but it isn't internally. Can you talk about, in a general sense, some of the reactions? Like, what's gone well? Where have you found resistance?
So I have been really impressed with how eager people are to talk about the work that needs to be done, right? And the first part of changing is saying we have a problem, and people willing to say we have a problem. And so that has been one thing that has really impressed me here, is that people are, you know, saying we have a problem and we need to fix this. It's probably the biggest change is the overall culture of, well, this is how we've always done that. This is how we've always done that. And you're like, well, let's now think of new ways of doing it. That's probably the hardest thing to kind of work through with a group as diverse as a group of faculty and students in the academic community.
Yeah. And an interesting holding of, we know we have a problem, this is how we've always done it, and the disconnect, then we need to change it if we want to fix the problem.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about a model in psychology that was a triangle, positive. Anyway, I can't remember it. It's been too long. But that notion of, there's some cognitive dissonance there then. There's a way we've always done it. We have a problem. Okay.
Yeah.
We got to do it differently then, right?
That
seems simple.
Yeah.
I mean, not that it's simple, but that awareness piece.
Yeah, and I think it's hard. In academia, we're, and I don't know if this is true of all units, all organizations, we're not very tolerant of mistakes. Mm, and so yeah. How do you build an organization where it's okay to say, I made a mistake, mm-hmm. but not end there, to say, okay, now what was that mistake? Why did I make it? Analyze it, evaluate it, mm-hmm. understand, like, and talk about that. And instead of just saying, you made a mistake,
yeah.
that was wrong,
yeah.
to say, the next step is, why did I make that mistake? How and what were the consequences? What were the impact? How can I change it? Mm-hmm. Change my behavior?
Which is what education and learning is.
Isn't
so it is interesting how we lose that.
Yeah.
We lose that, the very thing that we're instilling in our students.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah. How can we get that back?
How can we? Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be a really important key. Because if we can't admit that we make mistakes, mm-hmm. how are we going to address that we have a problem?
Yeah, right.
Or figure out how to fix it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And I don't. Maybe I've shared this story with you before, but it's one that one of my mentors, Parker Palmer, talks about doing a circle of trust with a group of physicians when. And he wrote about this in one of his books, so I know I can share it. and this particular physician said for the first time to himself and to this group that I'm on the edge of breaking the Hippocratic Oath regularly, mm-hmm. and I don't know what to do with that. And basically the outcome of what happened where all of these physicians were in this safe space to be able to say, me too, like I make mistakes, I've made mm-hmm. mistakes, and the culture is set up to cover them up. Mm-hmm. And so they created a, I don't remember what they call it, I'll get you the book. They created a model of like a no-fault zone where there was a space that they could go just as colleagues mm-hmm. where nothing would be reported. It was outside of the official, where they could talk about mistakes they had made that otherwise had to, mm-hmm. you know, if you talk about them, then you need to report them and it becomes yeah. this big, and their error rates went down mm-hmm. because they had that place,
that space to
talk yeah. about what went wrong and learn from it. Mm-hmm. And so it's become a model in the medical field. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know what that would look like in academia because right. I think where's the penalty?
Right. And so how do you build accountability, right?
Right.
With that. And so
yep.
there still has to be accountability. So those are some of the things just
yeah.
thinking about. How do we create? It's messy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
It's really complex.
It is.
But it's so important.
Yeah.
So yeah. important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got me thinking.
Yeah.
Which I love, right? Ooh. Yeah, let's keep talking about this. Because, that idea of accountability, are those two different things, either or is there a way to have it be a both and?
A both and.
Yeah.
It has to, yeah. It needs to be both and, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I don't know what that looks like. I don't know if we have how to grow that. Mm-hmm. One of the things I do love about UMD, and I think it's ahead of a lot of universities, is that we do have some space where we talk about these issues.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't happen on every campus.
Yeah.
That doesn't. And so I think that there's value in that and growing, you know, how do we grow that
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
keep that conversation going?
Yeah. And UMD is the only institution I've ever been at.
Yeah.
So, that's all I know. So mm-hmm. I think it's always helpful to have folks join who have been at different institutions to have some of those, like you said, new ideas and new ways of doing
mm-hmm.
it. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As well as to learn what we're doing well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the it's more than that theme.
Mm-hmm.
Is there an it's more than that Dean Wendy Reed story?
I don't know. It's more than that. Maybe I can share. So this is kind of a personal story, but I think it, like, over time, just recognizing that it really organizes where I am and sort of why this is so important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like I said, I have 3 children, and I was pregnant with my second when I lost my mother to breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know, kind of rock your world. Not that long ago, but, you know, it's what, she's 14 now, so okay. 14 years ago.
Yeah.
And growing up, we were in, you know, classic middle-class family, both school teachers. So my parents really worked to live on one salary and save for retirement. And my mother never got to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so it was, I think that thinking about that, I'm like, carpe diem, like, you know, live every day.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, love deeply, and I feel like I spend more time at work than I do at home with mm-hmm. my family,
yeah.
And so I better come to work and have an amazing place,
yeah.
Right?
Yep. Yeah.
It better be, and it better be for everybody that when they come to work, they see that they're valued,
mm-hmm.
that they can be successful. And so that's really at the core of that ethic that I have and mm-hmm. why I'm working hard on this.
Yeah, yeah. That makes sense. And to not wait.
Nope.
You know, like, when I retire, I will.
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yep.
You deserve to come to work every day, to come onto campus every day. And institutions of higher education are special communities. We get to build them mm-hmm. and design them, and we have that control. And so let's make it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's make it better than that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So does that notion of, I don't know if the phrase work-life balance resonates so much for me, but that's part of what I'm hearing in that too, is that to live a fullness of life now, not...
I want you to come to work and, you know, come to school and bring your whole self.
Yeah.
And when you can bring your whole self, what is work life? You know, what does mm-hmm. that mean?
Yeah.
That even at work, my whole self is here, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that, how do we create that space here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's why this work is so important
mm-hmm.
to me personally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's my bias, but sharing your stories
mm-hmm.
is, to me, part of what allows us to bring our whole selves. You know, and I can see you beyond your role. I know some of your story.
Mm-hmm.
And so... you know, for me, that creates the kinds of relationships where I'm more likely to be my whole self at work.
Yeah.
Instead of compartmentalizing that.
Yeah.
So, you know, in one sense, this podcast is toward that end as we mm-hmm. hear more of people's stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's really important.
Yeah. And some of the professional development work that we do, too, is, I think, that whole, with that notion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, how do you build that? And so,
mm-hmm. yeah,
we'll keep working on it.
Yeah, I know you will. So how about your own? You mentioned the importance of, you know, one of the things is this notion of providing support, and professional development was part of that.
Mm-hmm.
formula for you of support. And so for you, what's that look like for you?
Yeah. So this year I got a fellowship. It's called an iAspire Fellowship. And it's for people who identify as minority, so as a STEM woman, to learn more about leadership mm-hmm. and to be a better leader. And we've had it's a year-long fellowship. We have 3 meetings that we get together. So I have a cohort of 20 mm-hmm. pretty amazing people. And we've met once now. and we develop a project over that year of things that we want to work on. The first meeting was sort of about self and understanding self mm-hmm. and what your whole self is and why you make the kinds of decisions and your conflict and personality type, et cetera. Mm-hmm. The second meeting will be more about teams and how do you build teams. And then the third meeting is more about institutions and how do you change and build institutions. So that's one piece. I think it's really important to take that time to understand each of those pieces. And so that's kind of one of the professional development pieces. And how can I bring that to things like gender equity in STEM?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds fabulous.
It's amazing.
So you had the first of the three. Mm-hmm. Anything you learned about whole self that you're willing to share?
So we're one of the things that came out of it was as a scientist, right, I need a book. I need to read it. I need to read articles about it and analyze it a little bit.
Okay.
And so just what does a developmental organization look like?
Hmm.
And so that was one of the pieces of that really resonates well with me. So coming as your whole self, accepting, analyzing the mistakes that you make to make things better. Mm-hmm. And that everyone, if you take a growth mindset, everyone has the capacity to grow and learn, no matter how old you are or what position you're in. And so I really took that. I'm trying to figure out how to bring that in my development package, sort of how do I bring that back to the college
mm-hmm.
and the way we're working in our unit.
Yeah. And it sounds like there's an aspect in it where we need to make ourselves somewhat vulnerable,
yeah.
which is not a super popular thing to do in higher ed,
yeah.
in academia,
yeah.
right?
Yep.
And I would imagine in STEM, I mean, I'm totally, my boxes are showing here, but.
Yeah. Well, I think it's, you know, it's hard to, as an expert, mm-hmm. to say, I don't know.
Yeah.
Sometimes. And it's hard as an expert to say, I was wrong. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's important to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to have this group of. Aspire, is that what you said?
Mm-hmm.
Aspiring leaders who are leaders to validate that.
Yep.
You're not in it alone.
Yeah. And we're exploring a little bit about what does it mean to be a minority leader
mm-hmm.
and how do you lead as a minority?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that you can't just put that away and, you know, it's part of our whole self. If we're bringing our whole self. We're bringing all of those pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. To our leadership positions.
I think one of the things that I have really admired and appreciated about you is, and I'm connecting it now to you bringing your whole self, is so often, I mean, I've been at UMD 30 years, and I have so often seen women in roles of leadership act then like they have to lead in the way that it's always been led in more of a male style of leadership. And so in my own development thinking, is that what you have to do to be a leader? And seeing you be a successful, strong leader who's also very much servant, feminine.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks.
Yeah.
I'm going to breastfeed my baby at the table.
Yeah, totally. Right, right.
That's my whole self.
Yeah.
Yep. Right now.
Yeah.
And And that can be leadership too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's less, I think, probably some of the bias that, you know, mm-hmm. I can think of an activity I used to do in a gender class. Describe a mm-hmm. a successful person or leader, mm-hmm. and you get all these descriptors, and then describe a successful male, describe a successful female, acknowledge we're being binary here,
mm-hmm.
and the male goes with leader.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just been forever.
Yeah. And there's probably, I've always wondered, and this, you know, maybe comes from a place of insecurity a little bit, but where I take up a lot of space. I'm a very, very tall person. For a woman and for a man.
Yeah, like, yeah.
I'm bigger than most people.
How tall are you?
I'm 6'1".
Okay.
Yeah. And so that's not very feminine. And mm-hmm. how does that interact with opportunities that I've been given in mm-hmm. the past that maybe somebody didn't have the same stature that I did? You know, how does that play into sort of that development?
Interesting.
But and it maybe that gives me space, right? That's a privilege that has given me some space mm-hmm. to lead in a more feminine way.
Yeah.
When you look at me, you're like, she's very tall.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, though. I hadn't thought of it because I don't describe you as someone who takes up a lot of space otherwise, mm-hmm. or, you know, to take it up.
Yep.
So it's when you have something to say, you say it. Mm-hmm.
I think it's meaningful to me to hear that it's okay to lead with my whole self, you know, that's okay. Because there are times when you're like, oh boy, I don't know if that was...
Right.
That was okay to show that.
And just speaking for myself, for me, it's looking for humility in a leader is becoming one of my top.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, we want competence and all of that, but to have that humility that you're talking about is something I look for mm-hmm. in a leader. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to believe more and more people are hungering for some authenticity and, mm-hmm. Or maybe it's just people we hang out with.
Yeah.
but no, I think that's super important.
Yeah.
And I hear my faculty colleagues talk about, I mean, I think we're not even in our leaders, but in ourselves and mm-hmm. each other is like, we want to be able to be real mm-hmm. and authentic mm-hmm. and bring our whole selves. And no, this isn't about me, but I'll share a story, another story of, first coming to teach, mm-hmm. and I didn't know how to teach, and I was real intimidated by that, thinking they would teach me how to teach, because they're hiring me to teach, and that wasn't part of it. Yeah, and just kind of looking around like, okay, I'll have to. I don't know, maybe everyone else knows how to teach and I'm the only one that doesn't. And finding a group of faculty colleagues in what was then called Instructional Development Service who were there to learn how to teach, and they were all willing to acknowledge they didn't know how to teach.
Yeah.
And it was so like, oh my gosh, thank goodness I'm not the only person who wasn't trained to teach mm-hmm. and yet hired to teach. I mean, that's part of we talk about in higher ed.
Yeah.
Because, again, being a content expert instead. But I think that for me was a refreshing, because I was interested in teaching and learning, it was maybe an entry point for me that others might not find, which was a community of colleagues who were saying, yeah, we're not good at this.
We got to figure it out.
Yeah.
We got to figure it out.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's more out there than maybe mm-hmm. we hear about or know about.
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah.
It's okay to be vulnerable because then you can say, I can get better.
Right.
And when you have a growth mindset, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought of one other place where an example of how we're addressing policy and how that's influencing equal opportunities. So when positions that have a title, so I know that there are a lot of positions in the university that have different titles of undergraduate director or graduate director or graduate student director or associate department head, any of those positions that have a title, we might think of them as just more work for someone, but that title carries a certain amount of power with it, and it's a resume builder. I mean, you can put that down and it means something somewhere if you go and apply for a job somewhere else. So one of the things we've done in the college, in the way things were done in the past, is it was often someone was asked to do those roles, and now we have a policy in place where it has to be advertised to the people who are eligible, so even within a department, for at least 10 days in some kind of way that everybody can put their name in the hat mm-hmm. and go through the process, and then it's not just tapping someone on the shoulder.
Yeah.
because those were ways maybe that power was being held in one place in some areas.
And have you found positive impact in that change?
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean,
sometimes people rise that you wouldn't have known
have
about.
Known about before.
Yeah.
That can express why they're interested, and then you can go through an actual process.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a year ago, we had two women in those kinds of positions, you know, outside of my office. And now I think we're at 5 or 6.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so I think it does
significant.
Make a difference.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
I don't have anything else.
I could talk some more if you want.
We could keep talking.
But keep talking.
Yes. Well, I am. I have a gift for you.
You do.
And this is a different gift.
A different gift.
It's still a homemade gift, but it's music. I was listening to this morning thinking, I want Wendy Reed to have one of these. So it's a CD that my spouse Sarah and I recorded.
Mm-hmm.
So it's here in the KUMD studios. Maybe they'll add some in here. But it's one that I listen to this time of year because it's very, it was our response to the season.
Winter.
And music that kind of takes us through fall, winter, solstice, Christmas, Hanukkah, New Year's, just kind of it's a very contemplative.
Very nice. Thank you very much,
Paul. And I would love to share that part of my whole self.
Thank you.
With you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's called Winter Wanderings. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you.
Since there's no eggs. but you would have been the perfect person to give eggs to.
Oh. I do love eggs.
I have given you my eggs, though,
you
right?
Have. Yes.
Yeah. So you've been able to.
They're lovely.
To do whatever you do with those eggs.
Yes.
So
I eat them.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. They didn't end up in your research.
No.
Okay. Because I'd be curious.
Yeah.
We are, this is a tangent, but Sarah and I, we don't have children and we're aunts and, you know, the aunts to friends' children who aren't, you know, it's not a biological aunt.
Yeah.
We have all of that. And the interesting thing we've noticed about chickens and maybe other birds are this too is, the eggs they're laying on aren't necessarily theirs.
Yeah, they like to share, don't they?
And yet when they hatch those eggs, they will rip your head off if you try. These aren't my babies. They're someone else's.
Yeah.
And so it was this wow, they're like aunties.
Yeah.
And sitting on, because usually by the time we decide to let them, give them some eggs to lay on or to hatch, they're done laying because they don't lay when they're... when they're broody and sitting on them.
Yeah.
So every one of those eggs did not come from them.
Yeah.
And that's intense to think about.
Yeah, there's some birds that actually can identify their own eggs. They can look at it and reject eggs that aren't their own.
Okay.
But a lot of birds will share their drive, which is hormonally determined.
Okay.
To do that is so strong. We've even in the penguins, we saw a bird, and this was a male actually, it wasn't a female, and he took a rock and brooded and sat on the rock because just that drive to do that was so great.
Wow.
Yeah.
For how long? I would want to just go sneak a little baby in there.
I know. We felt so bad for him. I felt so bad for him. He was on it for quite a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, that's... So, some birds, it's just, I'm going to sit on eggs. Just give me eggs.
Yeah.
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 So, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And thank you again for being on the show.
Yeah. Thank you for having me on the show. It's a fun conversation.
Yeah.
As always.
Yeah. You can listen to more episodes of UMD's It's More Than That podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. Visit d.umn.edu/campusclimate to find additional information on our episodes and more about what the University of Minnesota Duluth is doing to build a better, more welcoming campus community for all.
And you can sign our pledge and work with us on your own personal journey.